This is NHL Midweek,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
We didn't play well enough to win that game. They didn't play well enough to win that game, but they're no different than everybody else in that room. We were horse from the start, from the drop of that first puck right to the very end of it.
Paul Maurice with a very succinct,
spicy,
probably accurate, well, not probably accurate, definitely accurate assessment of the Winnipeg Jets' performance last night against the Montreal Canadiens. An absolute embarrassment on home ice as the Jets lost to Montreal by a 7-4 margin last night. This after the 2-0 victory over the Calgary Flames on Monday night. Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, welcome to the Winnipeg Jets in a nutshell, and welcome to this Thursday edition of NHL This Week, alongside Sean Assor and Ezra Ginsberg. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. You can reach us here in studio at Illegal Curve. If you're more of a Facebook sort, maybe you are a grandmother, you do Facebook. We're at facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And, of course, our website with the latest Jets and Moose news is IllegalCurve.com. We start the program looking back at the Winnipeg Jets homestand. It started well enough. Monday night, 2-0 victory over the Calgary Flames. Good feelings after that game. I thought that game was a little bit dull. Not a ton happened, but doesn't matter. A win's a win. 2-0. You take the victory and say thank you very much. Got a Montreal Canadiens team that's coming in to play to the MTS Center last night. A banged up Montreal Canadiens team. They decided to rest Carey Price, which maybe tells you all you need to know about what the league itself thinks of the Winnipeg Jets.
The first game of back-to-back, Drew. So they were going to go with
They're going to keep Carey Price
right
for the harder game tonight in Minnesota, as opposed to the game against the Jets on Wednesday night, for sure. And boy, oh boy, that was about as embarrassing a performance on home ice as we have seen in years, I would suggest. I mean, there were bad games before. There's been bad games. The New Year's Eve game against the Islanders was a bad game.
I was going to say this. Since 2016.
Yeah. But, you know,
Boston was bad, too.
Yeah. That was on the road, and, you know, you heard Paul Maurice sort of had an excuse for that game that the team was tired. Team wasn't tired last night. Team just went out there and played, like, horse bleep.
Yeah, well, Drew, you mentioned the game Monday against the Calgary Flames. So the week starts off really good with a 2-0 shutout victory over a team that you're chasing for the Western Conference playoff spot. But, I mean, last night, guys, was an unmitigated disaster. And I've listened to a lot of the calls on the post-game show, the Big Show, and Hustler and Lawless, and I'm not at all prepared to blame this on the goaltending. And the goaltending was not good yesterday. I mean, Connor Hellebuyck gets the shutout. It was his sixth straight start yesterday. He gets pulled after allowing 3 goals on 7 shots, I believe. And then Michael Hutchinson comes in. But, I mean, guys, this was a team loss. And Toby Enstrom, you know how many goals Toby Enstrom and Jacob Trouba were out for yesterday, Drew?
Please tell me.
5 of 7.
Not a very good performance.
5 of the 7 goals Toby Enstrom and Jacob Trouba were on the ice for. And I realize, you know, Dustin Byfuglien, you know, on Philip Deneau's goal, he, you know, breezes by Dustin Byfuglien. And, you know, Drew Stafford didn't make it easy for him at all in the neutral zone either. But Toby Enstrom and Jacob Trouba have to be better. In my opinion, it was the way they played in the defensive zone. They were not good in the defensive zone. They were soft. And they let a banged-up Montreal Canadiens team come in here and beat them 7-4. So I'm not going to blame this on Connor Hellebuyck or Michael Hutchinson. I think it's a team effort, and they lost as a team.
I agree with you that they lost as a team, because that was there was nobody on that roster last night that can hold their head up high saying, I did my part. They were bad, you know, from the goaltending out to the forwards, top to bottom. The goaltending, I was in the stands last night. I wasn't in the box. I was in the stands last night, and I was sitting behind Connor Hellebuyck during the first period. It's rare to see an NHL goaltender look that shaky right from the outset of the game. I mean, he just looked, and it's coming off a shutout. He absolutely looked shell-shocked that he just had nothing.
Look at the replay of the first goal.
Yeah.
Philip Deneau is Toby Enstrom's man. What does Toby Enstrom do with Philip Deneau? He's checking him, and then he goes for skate behind the net. Yeah. Look at the replay.
I know.
I mean, that goal is not on Connor Hellebuyck. Brian Flynn's goal, the second goal Montreal scored, That Connor Hellebuck has to stop. Thomas Plekanec's goal, the puck comes out to him. He's in the slot. Nobody's around him. Toby Enstrom, Jacob Trouba, and Mark Scheifele are all behind the goal line. You have three of the five Jets behind the goal line. Thomas Plekanec roofs it top corner. I don't think that's Hellebuck's fault.
The first goal, I thought the rebound control on that first goal was pretty horrific. And you're not wrong, Izzy. Look, we can argue top to bottom over who was most responsible for that performance last night. Everybody can carry their equal share of blame. That was a horrendous performance on home ice. And, Sean, I just... This team, again, Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, I said it off the top. You win two in a row, then you go into Buffalo, and you're winning in Buffalo, and you give up a lead to the worst team in the league. Second worst team in the league, whatever Buffalo is at that point in time. And you lose that game on Saturday afternoon. You come home and you play Monday and you beat a Calgary Flames team that's in the playoff spot. And you beat them 2-0 and you do a lot of good things in that game. Wasn't the most exciting game, but it's a win. And then you come out last night on Wednesday night. I know it's a nationally broadcast game, and I know that doesn't really mean anything anymore because it doesn't. It's not special like it was with Hockey Night in Canada back in the day. But you give up 7 goals at home. You look just men against boys from the start last night.
Hey, you look pedestrian. You look like you were unable to compete from literally the opening faceoff when a goal was scored less than a minute into the game, into the first and second period. A couple things really, really stood out to me last night. One thing, first of all, I have gone on the record by saying I love what we have Trevor Kidd here to analyze the goals with us. He's the absolute gem to listen to break down these games. He had a really interesting point. He said that at the game day skate at 10:30 in the morning yesterday, there was a span of about 15 minutes where Connor Hellebuck did not stop a shot. He said he let in goals for about 15 minutes straight and then could not get off the ice fast enough. I thought that is a pretty interesting observation from one former pro goaltender on a current professional goaltender. Mm-hmm. Matty Perreault in the postgame saying that the team couldn't rally when they went down 3-2. That is alarming considering the amount of comebacks that the Jets team have already accomplished this year. I got to use the bleep in the postgame. Amazing. I love when I get to pull up my little bleep tool and put it in Maurice's post-game comments. Oh, makes me so happy. It shouldn't, but it does. And also, Alex, if you could cue this up. This is incredible. So, Michael Remus, producer Remus, he does some excellent work
here. Yeah, by the way, happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Remus.
30th birthday to Remus. I know.
Oh, my Lord. Anyways.
We all get old.
So, there was a caller that was quite animated about the fact that Wade Flaherty should lose his job and that Trevor Kidd should be the new goaltending coach of the Winnipeg Jets. And then Rick and Trevor started to talk about when's the last time Trevor let in, or the first time Trevor let in 7 goals as a pro goalie. So anyways, they're talking about this. Remus sends in an entire stat package based on Trevor Kidd getting lit up, and this ensues. It's amazing.
You don't want a goaltending job?
No.
What are we going to do with Flats?
Flats is fine where he is.
We got to take a quick time out. Just before we go, Michael Remus sent me an email. He's listening to the postgame show. I mentioned Mario Lemieux.
Right.
So he dug it up quickly. December 19th, 1995, you're in net. What would that be? Calgary, 95?
Yeah.
Yeah. Penguins got 7 by you. That was your third full season. All right. Lemieux had a goal and 3 assists. Ron Francis had 3 assists. And Jágr had a goal and 2 assists.
Reamer just texted me saying, hey, can you come on the show tomorrow? Because Nides is on the plane to Arizona.
Oh, I suppose.
And then he just throws me under the bus like that.
Sorry
Go figure.
About that.
So that's just the most incredible thing ever, that Remus sends in the stat package sewering Trevor Kidd, and then as that's happening, he texts him to come on the show.
Well, I think he should. I hope that Trevor comes on the show and just it's 15 minutes of Trevor beating Remus with his blocker. Well, that would be it. I would want, they should put that on TSN3. I'd
TSN
watch
Jets,
that.
Yeah.
And that's why, Sean, I think Trevor Kidd was on H&L tonight as opposed to yesterday. Maybe he was going to come on the roundtable. But, I mean, come on, guys. I mean, there's way too much finger pointing right now at the goaltenders. And, we cover this team, Drew.
Ezzy, look at the numbers.
Well,
Ezzy, look at their numbers. It's year 6. They don't have NHL caliber goaltending.
Yeah, but to me, that's irrelevant. We're looking at this year, right? Connor Hellebuck wasn't here for the first 4 years, and he only played 30 games last year. So we're talking about this year, Drew. And, Connor Hellebuck has a shutout, and everybody's talking about how well he's played. And he has played very well. He went into Florida, played really well. if you remember, right after Christmas, the Jets won in Chicago. So, yeah. I mean, I'm not going to start piling on Connor Hellebuck and Michael Hutchinson and throwing them under the bus. I mean, can Michael Hutchinson be better? Absolutely. Has he had a rough year? Yes. He hasn't been good this year. But to me, the big problem with this team is not goaltending. It's the way they've played defensively. You have three guys right now on the Winnipeg Jets that are in the top 20 in scoring. I think they can be better right now. And, you know, the Jets could easily have four, five, six more points in the standings. But a game like last night, Drew, I'm just looking at last night's game.
Yeah.
It was the way they played defensively in their own zone. It starts with the defensemen, and I didn't think the forwards were very good either. So the Jets have to be better defensively. We saw that against Calgary. We saw that against Florida last week. The Jets just have to do that more consistently. And I realize we sound like a broken record here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, but, I mean, guys, how else can you explain it when you're that good against Calgary? And, Drew, the Calgary Flames have weapons. You've got Sean Monahan. You've got Johnny Gaudreau. Michael Frolik is having a good year. Sam Bennett. Matthew Tkachuk. I mean, the Jets shut down those players. So why couldn't they shut down the Habs?
And it's not like they're shutting down a full-strength Montreal Canadiens team. They're shutting, you know, this is a Montreal Canadiens team that had, what, seven regulars out of their lineup last night?
No Galchenyuk, no Gallagher, no Markov, no Shaw.
Yeah, so those are, you know, guys that are in their top six, top nine. Markov, obviously, on the back end. But I mean,
and Philip Deneau is a good player. You don't want to take anything away from the guys that scored last night, but that certainly wasn't the full Montreal Canadiens roster that we saw earlier. And Carey Price wasn't in net. I mean, Al Montoya has done a great job as the backup this year, but you weren't facing, you know, the best goaltender in the world in Carey Price.
Al Montoya was lousy last night also. I mean, he wasn't
very busy at all.
You know, after two periods, you've got 13 shots on goal. That's all you've got is 13 shots. You got three past them on 13 shots.
The Jekyll and Hyde analogy is great because, you know, obviously the inconsistencies with the team. But whoa, did we see Hyde come out yesterday behind the bench? Or I guess Jekyll. Which is the bad one?
I don't remember. That's a good question. But you know what? Everybody's praising Paul Maurice that he shows some emotion behind the bench or whatever. I mean, he's got to wear the blame on this as well as the players do.
They only got two shots after that tirade. On what kind of response is that?
Not. It's 3 years today he was hired. Three years ago today he was hired as the Jets head coach.
Remus's birthday.
I'm not sure that the Jets are any more, you know, how much further ahead are they now than they were 3 years ago?
Well, they're the exact same as last year. Their record is identical up to this point.
Yeah. I don't see any reason to believe that they're going to flick a switch. I mean, it's 6 years, guys.
I mean, but hold on a second, though, Drew. I mean, there's lots of hockey to be played. Right now, the Western Conference, we've talked about it. There are 12 teams right now that are still in it. Arizona and Colorado are the only teams right now that are out of it. I mean, you look at Dallas, Nashville, Vancouver, LA. There's a bunch of teams that are going to be fighting for those wild card spots, right? So, I mean, the Jets have maybe another 5 to 10 games here. But if there are, you know, 5 or 6 points out of a playoff spot come March, that's really tough to make up those points.
They've won 20 of 44 games. They've played 44 games. They are... You know, I know they're only a point out of the wild card spot or whatever, but I mean,
yeah, they've played more games.
They played more games. Yeah. You have no evidence that they've given up the most goals in the entire NHL.
But to me, that's a team stat.
I'm not saying
that doesn't all fall on the goaltenders. And don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that the Jets have top five goaltending in the league right now. I'm just saying, based on a game like last night, you can't blame the goaltenders for all of those goals. And just go back and look at them. I mean, the goal that Philip Deneau scores to open up the game, and the goal he scored to make it 5-2, and then Scheifele scored to make it 5-3. I mean, Philip Deneau goes through the neutral zone as if nobody's even in the neutral zone.
Look, we said from the start, the entire team was bad last night, but this goaltending problem, they're not solely responsible for last night's performance, but at some point in time, you need better than bottom five in the league goaltending. And I'm not sure that they've had that in now 6 years. Head to break. We're going to talk about the young phenom, Patrick Laine. He's out of the lineup. He's an all-star. We'll talk about that next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 12.
This is NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN 1290.ca.
Can you say if he has done any light skating yet?
No, you'll know it. When he gets back on the ice, okay. I'll tell you.
Okay.
That when he gets back on the ice, he's not at that stage yet.
Okay. So he's not getting on the trip or joining the trip then?
He's not on the trip.
Yeah.
No.
That's Jets head coach Paul Maurice giving an injury update on Patrick Laine, of course, out of the lineup since he was concussed on Saturday afternoon in Buffalo. Welcome back to the to NHL This Week. The segment brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. For more information, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. So Paul Maurice talking about Patrick Laine earlier today. No sign of the player, the rookie for the Jets, the phenom for the Jets, on the ice as of yet after suffering the concussion.
He was at Thermia, though.
He was at Thermia. He decided to tweet about that, which
and
was
the zoo.
Nice.
Yep.
I don't think he went to the cold bath,
the
though.
He went to the zoo. Yep.
Zoo was closed today. Too cold
today,
for the polar bears.
Polar bears don't work when it's
cold. Hold on. Okay, so you know everybody here in Winnipeg realizes how cold it's been.
Yeah.
It's unbearable outside.
It's fairly miserable out there.
Walking to the MTS Center from my car, it's about
Do you have gloves?
Yes.
Okay. Were you wearing your gloves?
Yeah.
Was there a reasonable possibility those gloves were...
I have those Mountain Equipment gloves that I spent $70 on. You know I have those gloves.
I'm shocked you haven't lost them yet.
I don't think I've spent $70 on anything in 5 years.
Certainly not clothes, as we can attest to today.
Yeah. Hey, the Under Armour, though.
Yeah.
Second skin.
When you walk for longer than 2 or 3 minutes, your skin literally feels like it's going to peel off.
Yeah.
It's unbearable.
It's pretty cold out.
The fact that the zoo was closed is just crazy, though.
The zoo wasn't closed because of the animal safety. It was closed for the people's safety,
yeah,
for
but
the record.
No, but you said
polar
that
bears can handle
it. Yeah, the polar bears were too cold.
No, yeah. I mean,
they're polar bears.
I was kidding.
I will say this. I woke up this morning. I checked like Twitter and social media, and people were losing their mind over the weather. And I looked outside expecting like some snowy apocalypse, and it was just like a nice sunny
what time. Did you
day.
Wake up?
I don't know.
9:30 or later?
I'll say set my alarm 9:15 this morning.
Yeah. Okay. Well, at 7:30 or 7:15 when I was taking
that's not a real time.
When I was taking since there's a 7:15 a.m. now.
Don't be silly.
Yeah. When I was taking the dog out at 7 o'clock this morning, it was much less delightful out than it was at 9:30 when you awoke and then from your lazy slumber there, Mr. Asar.
What does Brixton think of this weather?
Brixton turns around and wants to go right back inside and say, screw this, I want to go right back to bed immediately. But the dog has given up 100%. She doesn't care if she gets walked. She's like, just let me stay warm for all I care.
Well, Patrick's not going on the road trip to Arizona and California, so let's just hope that he's in a warm spot right now.
Well, that's, you know, so of course he gets concussed on Saturday against the Sabres. I sort of thought that, I mean, I guess you never know with concussions, and that's the problem is, you know, I'm used to sort of the NFL style of dealing with concussions, which is A, not to really care that much, and then B, if they actually have to care, the guy's out for a week and then he's back and healthy. So I suppose from the Jets' perspective, it is, you know, they're certainly being cautious, and that's admirable and appropriate given the circumstances. But so no Laine on the road trip. I thought there might be a possibility, but of course, you know, with the bad news of that, there is the good news that he was named to the NHL All-Star team earlier this week.
Right, and guys, the bottom line is the Jets are not going to put Patrick Laine back on the ice until they know that he's ready.
Yeah.
Bottom line. So if he's ready to go back to practice, he'll practice. And then if he's looking good in practice and then they put him in a contact jersey and he's ready to go, that's when he'll come back. So he's not going to play on this road trip. Is he going to play next Thursday against Arizona? Maybe. But we know that he's definitely not going to be playing for at least another week, right? On the topic of the All-Star game, I mean, Patrick Laine deserves to be there, guys. He's tied for the rookie goal-scoring lead right now with Austin Matthews. And sure, he's played a few more games. But, I mean, this guy has really been the big story for the Jets in the first half of the season. So, you know, that is the silver lining for Patrick Laine. He's out with a concussion, but he's going to get to go to L.A.
Presumably, and
represent the Jets at the All-Star game. And, you know, if Laine can't go, then Mark Scheifele or Nikolai Ehlers is probably going to be the choice.
Well, and I mean, it's a splitting hairs argument, and ultimately it's the All-Star game, so really who cares? But, I mean, Mark Scheifele is certainly would have been just as good of a representative from the Jets given the season he's had. I mean, he's 11th in the NHL in scoring. You know, Laine's 19th and Ehlers is up to 16th now. So really, you could have flipped the coin between any of the three. I think Laine probably got the nod because a little bit of the Laine versus Matthews debate and things of that nature. But you know, whoever represented the Winnipeg Jets of those three, it was going to be a deserving recipient.
And Ehlers is on a 6-game point streak right now. But Sean, I mean, when you're looking at the Jets right now, Patrick Laine, you can't really argue with him being the Jets' all-star game choice.
Yeah, it's a 3-on-3 tournament, and you're going to put Patrick Laine on the ice with two other teammates, one of which probably is going to be Patrick Kane. The guy's going to score from all over the place. What I do think is interesting, though, with regards to our second selection, if Laine can't go, is the different, like, you know, you argue between Ehlers and Scheifele. I think that Ehlers is more deserving just in the sense of what the All-Star game represents. It's a 3-on-3 tournament where speed and skill are the main factors. And I'm not saying that Mark Scheifele isn't fast and skilled, but, you know, he's also battling a bit of a...
You're saying Ehlers would be the more choice?
I'd say Ehlers highlights more what the All-Star game is trying to sell. The skill and the speed and the creativity and that almost like shinny style that can really come out when 3-on-3 is on display. And I think he'd be a ton of fun to watch with some of the other all-star caliber players from around the Central Division on the same team.
Yeah, no argument
there's,
there.
Yeah, there's no wrong answer.
There's no wrong answer. I mean, the whole all-star game, you know,
it is what
it's
it
an
is.
All-star
yeah,
game.
Exactly.
It's nothing to really get too worked up about by any stretch of the imagination. It's good for Patrick Laine. He gets, good for him. He gets that nice bonus check. I believe that's one of the Schedule A bonus amounts, $250,000 or something for being named to the All-Star team.
And if you're into the skills competition, and actually that's what I like the most about the All-Star game as opposed to the actual game.
A new format this year.
It is a new format, but if you look at what Patrick Laine did in the Jet skills competition with the shooting accuracy, I don't know if we've seen someone this accurate since Ray Bourque. So I think it would be really exciting to see Patrick Laine in that shooting accuracy. My money would be on him to win because he was absolutely dominant at the Jets skills competition. So, I mean, the most unfortunate thing about Patrick Laine being out of the lineup right now with this concussion is how well the Laine, Scheifele, Ehlers line was playing. And sure. Jets head coach Paul Maurice talked about it. I mean, that's what's so unfortunate. And it really was, in that game that everything really just started to go downhill for the Winnipeg Jets.
The game against Buffalo, you're
yes, the
about.
Game was tied at that time.
Yeah.
And
after they somehow
Ehlers,
managed to give up a two-goal lead in a span of about 25 seconds.
And we talked about it on Saturday's show, Drew. Scheifele, Laine, and Ehlers was really the story in the two wins in Florida, right? So that's what's the most unfortunate. Laine was playing so well, and so were Mark Scheifele and Nikolaj Ehlers. So, you know, you hope that he's back in game action next week. But again, I mean, the Jets are not going to let him go back on the ice until they know that he's ready.
No, they're certainly not, I think be in favor of them rushing him back. That's just not something that happens anymore in this day and age with regard to concussions. It's amazing. You know, it's only been 42 games now that, you know, Patrick Laine has played in the NHL. His presence on the power play, there were a couple of different opportunities yesterday in that game against Montreal where the power play was moving the puck very well, and they had a couple power play goals. They have one power play goal, I believe.
Yeah, Scheifele's second
Scheifele
goal.
Very quickly, 10 seconds into the power play, they scored.
That
and there
a
were
nice
a couple
goal.
Other ones where you saw that they, you know, where I think it was Wheeler was almost set up in the Laine role. And he just doesn't have, I mean, very few people in the league have that release of Laine. And there were great setups, and the puck was moving, and, you know, you had the defense on their heels. And the Jets, just without Laine there, the trigger man, who, I mean, I'm not saying Laine would have automatically scored on those, but the extra tenth of a second that it takes Blake Wheeler to get a shot off, Patrick Laine can get it off quicker, and, you know, the opportunities are there for the Jets.
Well, if you guys remember, the Jets had a 5-on-3 against Montreal.
Yes.
And I believe they only had one shot, and that shot wasn't when it was 5-on-3, because the 5-on-3 was only for about 50 seconds, but they only had one shot on that power play. So I thought that they were forcing it to Dustin Byfuglien, and they have other guys that can shoot the puck. Nikolaj Ehlers can shoot the puck. Mark Scheifele can shoot the puck. So, I mean, certainly, Drew, without Patrick Laine, your power play is a lot less dangerous. So if Patrick Laine is in the lineup, I think they score on that 5-on-3.
Probably, just because it's such a weapon that it's, you know, it's like, you know, Alex Ovechkin being out there, and you try stopping him, it's more often than not, you're not going to be successful.
It also, with Patrick Laine off the power play, especially for that younger unit, it closes the space for all of the other Jets on the ice, because so much focus goes into preventing that pass for the one-timer that all of the attention kind of shifts to the left side of the ice, leaving a Nikolaj Ehlers or a Nick Petén, let's say, on the right side of the ice, much more room to operate, that split second more to kind of survey and see what's happening on the ice, and then they can make their decisions accordingly. But when he's not on the ice, the penalty killers can spread out more, limiting that time and space for the guys opposite of Laine on the opposite wall. And as a result, those power play specialists lose that extra split second that could be necessary in creating a goal or a play that results in a shot on net.
And Sean, yesterday you saw Joel Armia, for example, get some power play time. But Joel Armia's strength is being a penalty killer, right? Mm-hmm. So Joel Armia is not going to be a guy. Maybe he gets some second power play opportunities, but he's not going to be a guy long term that you're going to have on your first power play unit. So, you know, he gets some opportunities in the Jets, as you mentioned, Drew. Scheifele gets a power play goal, but certainly that's one of the areas that was so hot for the Jets.
Sure.
And Laine had a big part in that. And Sean makes a good point. When Laine is not out there, it does have a trickle-down effect for the looks that you can give other teams, right? So, again, it's unfortunate, but it looks like he's progressing. He had a good time at Thermia, so should be back on the ice soon.
Yeah, the Jets, of course, will keep us abreast, and we'll keep you abreast on the status of Patrick Laine. When we come back, we're going to discuss the Boston Bruins. They're in a playoff spot, but there's some controversy swirling around their job security of their head coach. It's coming up next. You're listening to NHL This Week on TSN 1290.
This is NHL Midweek,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Shortly past the bottom of the hour, you're listening to NHL This Week, the segment brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. And remember, every Jets game, big screen TV, full audio, drink specials, food specials, Bernstein's Deli is the place to be to watch your hometown team. Earlier this morning, I had the opportunity to sit down with Mick Calaggio. Mick covers the Boston Bruins for the Standard Times in New Bedford, Massachusetts. Has been covering the Bruins since 1991. Earlier this week, there was a lot of talk. Don Sweeney, the Bruins general manager, didn't give a vote of confidence to Bruins head coach Claude Julien, which is really surprising given that the Bruins are currently in a playoff spot. Here's my conversation with Mick Calaggio about the Bruins. Welcome back to NHL This Week here on TSN 1290. We're pleased to be joined by Mick Calaggio. He covers the Boston Bruins for the Standard Times in New Bedford, Massachusetts. Mick, good evening. Thanks very much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Mick, I've got to say about the Boston Bruins team, it's an interesting phenomenon here. I'm not sure what expectations were before the season, but here you are, we're January the 12th, and the Bruins are in a playoff spot, second in the Atlantic Division, yet you're hearing a lot about the job security about Bruins head coach Claude Julien. Maybe from an outsider's point of view here in Winnipeg, it seems bizarre because I'm not sure that anybody had much expectations for the Bruins entering this season.
Not people outside, but inside, they've had two straight playoff misses. And at the end of last season, Cam Neely was asked, what would your attitude be about your progression and your management team, your staff, your players? What are you thinking if you go through a third and you miss? And he said, well, then you're spinning your wheels. Well, now everybody since that point has been oriented toward the Bruins need to make the playoffs. They're trying to serve two masters here. They have a long-range retooling program that they're trying to build around their current core. They're trying to be the Detroit Red Wings of the early 2000s. They won the Cup in 97 and 98, and then they retool, and they do it again in 2002. They retool, they do it again in 2008, and now it looks like their 25-year playoff streak is about to bite the dust, and you say to yourself, well, now that Datsyuk's out finishing his career in the KHL, we now see that serving two masters is they're running out of luck in the salary cap era to do it that way. The Bruins are trying to do the same thing, and when you have that many developing and entry-level players on your team, or other guys who are otherwise new to your team, it takes a long time to get where you want to be as a team, and one bad week can change the whole picture in such a closely knit division and conference.
Yeah, I mean, certainly it's a close division. They're the Atlantic Division. They're second right now with a record of 22-17-5. Is there a head coach, you know, going back to Claude Julien and Don Sweeney's refusal to sort of endorse him as the head coach and really give him that vote of confidence you would typically expect to hear from a general manager? Is there a head coach out there that would be doing better with this Bruins team? I would have to say, you know, Julien at a, you know, they're pretty much 500 right now. It's a pretty decent mark to be at in the playoffs here on the 12th of January.
Yeah, the true 500, winning half your hockey games.
Yeah. We kill for that here in Winnipeg.
That's really the playoff line. You get 42, 43 wins, you can expect to make the playoffs. If you get fewer, you can expect not to. And Sweeney, to be fair, says that the recent article in the Boston Globe that painted him as considering a coaching change was a stretch. And that what he really said, and if you do read the article, you get three graphs down and he's firing himself. So he's saying that he stressed that he has to consider all things at all times. And he always says this as sort of like, let's just get that right out there. Everything is under consideration here, including me, including Cam, everything. But that doesn't mean it's imminent. That doesn't mean the organization's leaning that way. They seem very married to Julien, very married to their process. And Julien had a great quote today in the Boston Herald in Steve Conroy's notebook where he discusses that not only do they have a lot of entry-level and rookie players, they have a lot of significant new guys who, even though they're new to the team, and just because they don't consider themselves a rebuilding team, but they're building towards something, and while they're doing it, it's a process, and they have to be patient through the process. I think they're much more together on this than what is being out there right now, because everybody, as we approach the trade deadline, is looking for some sort of blip on the screen and some sort of big bang somewhere, and Boston has made a few headlines lately, especially all they have to do is lose three games, and all of a sudden you're on the outside of that bubble looking in instead of the comfortable side of it, or not the comfortable, but the safe side. And right now the Bruins are playing good hockey, and sometimes scoring is very hard for them. And when the scoring gets very hard for them, they tend to lose the close ones instead of winning them.
Yeah, certainly scoring has been hard for Patrice Bergeron this year. If you'd said that Bergeron would have 8 goals in 41 games and only 17 points at this point in the season, and the Bruins are still in a playoff spot, you'd probably think they'd be joking. You know, what's the struggle? Is Bergeron's biggest struggle just he hasn't been fully healthy at all this season?
It's hard to say. Some of the games I've watched him skate, he looks fine. I think part of what's going on is the emergence of David Pastrnak as the right wing on his line with Brad Marchand. Typically, until 2011, Patrice Bergeron has always been the afterthought of the Bruins line making, because you know you're going to get a great game out of Bergeron regardless of who's playing with him. So you don't worry about production with him. You worry about your scoring when you had Mark Savard and Phil Kessel, and then you had David Krejci with young Blake Wheeler. And now Bergeron emerged when Savard's career unfortunately came to a very unfair end. Bergeron had to take on a top two role, in which case Marchand bloomed on his side. But now Pastrnak has too, and what happens there is not only does Pastrnak like to have the puck, but Marchand has become a guy who goes all the way back to his goalie and gets it. So Marchand is playing a lot of 200-foot offense, and a lot of times Bergeron just doesn't touch the puck. A lot of times he's just a guy who's making sure that everything goes okay with these two dynamos, and that they're going to that he's going to be their defensive conscience when they're out there playmaking, because Marchand wants the puck more than he ever did. Pastrnak loves to have the puck, and they both happen to be on Bergie's line this year. I think a lot of this has to do with that.
Mick Colaggio is our guest on NHL this week. We're discussing the Boston Bruins. Mick, you look at the, you know, obviously, you know, we're in the radio business here, so we're always interested in trade rumors and things of that nature.
Newspapers are too.
Yeah, of course the newspapers are too. Yeah, certainly. A lot of chatter lately about the Bruins potentially looking at the Colorado Avalanche as a potential trade partner. We know the Avalanche have been an utter disaster on the ice, dead last in the NHL, and they have an abundance of forwards, and you mentioned the Bruins having some difficulty scoring, and they'd be looking for defensemen, you know, the guy that whose name comes to mind, of course, is Brandon Carlo. You know, do you foresee that something happening between the Bruins and the Avalanche, either involving Carlo or a different Bruins defenseman, or do you think that it's going to be they're going to try and maintain status quo this season and maybe look at something in the offseason?
I don't see Carlo moving. I think they're married to Carlo. I think they know they've got themselves. Every once in a while, they've been fortunate to bring in a very young defenseman and play him next to the veteran stalwart, whether it was when Ray Bourque broke in Kyle McLaren, or when Bobby Orr broke in Al Sims, or when Brad Park broke in Mike Milbury. You know, you think you got yourself what could be a 10-year regular breaking into the NHL at that point, and you give him to your best guy and you say, let me show you the ropes, son. And that's basically what happens. Zdeno Chara has been out of this world this year. This guy's been fantastic. And Brandon Carlo has, for the most part, functioned very well. He did hit a bit of a wall a few weeks ago, and his play took a dip. He began to have some adventures out there and some doubt when he handled the puck, some situations where he blew coverage. But then he came back with a really solid game the other night in St. Louis. So Carlo right now, I mean, we're starting to see a little bit of the reality here, the fact that he's only 20 years old. Chara's going to be 40, and it's incredible that one guy is literally twice as old as the other because they've been a heck of a tandem for them. I don't see the Bruins wanting to sacrifice what could be part of a very successful succession plan. They also have some other prospects they're very high on, like Charlie McAvoy, mm-hmm. who was with Team USA and also Boston University, and he's by far not the only one, Jeremy Lauzon, and it goes on. So you have a future here that they're cultivating, and they really want to see that through. I don't think they're going to get rid of one of their prime pieces in order to try to get a quick fix for goal scoring. I don't see it happening.
Mick Collagio is our guest. Mick covers the Boston Bruins for the Standard Times in New Bedford, Massachusetts. You know, Mick, you mentioned the young defensemen that the Bruins have coming up, and you mentioned Charlie McAvoy, Jakub Zboril of the St. John's Sea Dogs, Jeremy Lauzon as well. You know, is this is Don Sweeney sort of just waiting for that next wave of defensemen to come in and maybe solidify things on the back end? It has been a state of flux for the Bruins ever since they had to trade, his name escapes me, to the Islanders.
Johnny Boychuk,
thank you.
You know what was the real crippling one? Was midway through the 13-14 season in which the Bruins won the President's Trophy. Halfway through that season, I think it was December 28th, Dennis Seidenberg was handling the puck behind the Boston net, and one of the Ottawa Senators fell on him.
Sure.
And he wound up with an ACL-MCL, and the Bruins never recovered. They went out at the deadline, they got Andrej Mesharovich, and they never, ever recovered. By the end of their second-round series against Montreal, Masarosh was on the sidelines, and Matt Bartkowski was on the second pairing. So the Bruins not only had Dougie Hamilton on the first pairing, who was in his first full NHL season, Matt Bartkowski ditto, and Torrey Krug, who was there, are three guys on, and with Adam McQuaid injured, Kevin Miller was also in his first full NHL season. So you had their defense that had, at its Stanley Cup point, or even against the Blackhawks, you had a front four of Seidenberg, Chara, Andrew Ferentz, Johnny Boychuk, and suddenly now you have entry-level mistakes happening on every defense pairing, and they did not survive it. And since then, they've been hoping that the future could catch up with the present, which is quickly becoming the past, and there's an obvious gap there.
Mick Collagio, our guest on NHL This Week, discussing the Boston Bruins. Mick, you know, we had your colleague Jack Edwards on our program a number of months ago, I think when the Bruins first visited here in Winnipeg, or the last time the Jets played in Boston, rather. And we talked about Jimmy Hayes and how much of a disappointment he's been. You know, a couple months later, you know, he's sitting there with 3 points in 36 games. Why can't Jimmy Hayes put it together there in Boston?
I think part of the problem is that when the season begins, there's a lot of fast-paced, speed-based hockey, and this year it seemed to happen more than ever. And Jimmy Hayes, for his 6'5", he doesn't have great hockey instincts. He does generate some speed in the open ice because he's got long legs, but he always seemed to be chasing the game. And in the rare instances in which he caught up to it, he didn't seem to have the nerve or the gumption or whatever it was to finish it off a big hit or to get his stick on a puck. Finally, he just got getting a little greasier, getting a little dirtier, going to the net, taking a beating, and some puck hit him and went in the net, and he made a nice tip in at home. He's wound up scoring a couple of goals here, and it looked like maybe he's turning the corner. And now here we are in a couple of weeks on the other side of that little flurry, and he's been a healthy scratch. And I think we won one of the last two, three road games, he was a healthy scratch. So I think he's a marginal guy for this team, and in the long run, he may be a marginal guy for this league. I know he scored some goals for the Panthers, but it's easy to look at a player's production on a team that plays a lot of energy and a lot of offense and isn't worried about their results because they know they're not in the hunt, and look at those numbers, that they're transferable to a team that's trying to play the right way on both sides of the puck. And, you know, so it's been a hard go for him. I don't see him as a long-term member of the team. I don't know what the solution is, but Don Sweeney acquired him for Riley Smith, so you know he's going to give him every chance to make Don Sweeney look like he knew what he was doing there.
Mick Calaggio, our guest on NHL This Week, discussing the Boston Bruins. Anton Khudobin sent down to the minors. You know, they call up Zane McIntyre. Is the backup goaltending position a concern of Don Sweeney, something he's going to try and look to, you know, get a little more rest for Tuukka Rask? It's been sort of a black hole so far for the Bruins this year.
Unbelievable that they only have the one win with Khudobin in there. And predictably, he goes down to Providence and wins two games, and I think he let in a total of two goals in the two games.
Right.
And so in the American League, he went right down there and knocked it out of the park. And granted, it's a short sample, but Zane McIntyre was the best goalie in the American League prior to his recall. I think the Bruins are going to go for a little while and see if McIntyre is capable of functioning as Rask's backup. McIntyre came an awful long way since last year. Last year, his numbers in American League were not even very good. He didn't look like a very good draft pick during last season. This year, goalie Bob, and Winnipeg fans will know this, goalie Bob Essenza, is the Bruins goaltending coach, and he worked with McIntyre, and he's really cleaned up a lot of his game, and his game looks more patient now, and his game looks like he's tidier around the goalposts and handling the puck, and right now the Bruins are going to give this a look and see maybe Zane, this is his time to be a backup in the NHL. We'll see.
Mick, we'll let you go on this last question. We'd be remiss to be talking about the Boston Bruins and not mention the passing of Milt Schmidt, who passed away at the age of 98 about a week ago now, 8 days ago. You know, for hockey fans maybe outside of the Massachusetts region, what did Milt Schmidt really mean to the Boston Bruins organization?
I hope they make the movie, because there's no one thing that you can put your finger on. And that's not to say that there's nothing outstanding. There are several things. For this guy to help them win the Stanley Cup twice in a three-year period in 39 and 41, to go and serve the Canadian Air Force and be carried off the ice by the Montreal Canadiens on their shoulders. What other Bruin could pull that off? And then come back and win a Hart Trophy, and then retire to become the coach of the Bruins through transition years, become the assistant GM. And here's the other thing, very little known fact. When Milt Schmidt made the 1967 offseason deal that brought Phil Esposito, Ken Hodge, and Freddie Stanfield over from the Blackhawks to define the Boston team that would win the Stanley Cup in 70 and 71, he was the assistant GM, the Hap-Ems, and a conversation I'm privileged to have had with Milt, just myself talking to him about it one time, he told me that Hap did not like the deal and that Milt was in trouble if it didn't work out. Isn't that amazing?
That is fantastic.
You know, going on, the guy's never been without dignity. Even when Harry Sinden returned from his two-year exile from hockey and became managing director, quote-unquote, and Milt was marginalized as GM, he wound up going to the Capitals a few years later because his good friend Red Auerbach hooked him up with Abe Pollin. And Milt came back to the Bruins and has been the greatest ambassador for the game of hockey that anybody could ever hope for. You know, a lot of guys would have been bitter about what happened, but this guy never missed a beat. What an excellent human being, and the whole world loses without Milt Schmidt.
Well said. Mick Calaggio covers the Boston Bruins for the Standard Times. Mick, really appreciate your time. Thanks very much for joining us here on NHL This Week.
My pleasure. Thanks very much for having me.
Take care, Mick. Thanks again.
This is NHL Midweek,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Giveaway in the slot. Here's Ehlers, who shoots and scores! And the Jets lead it 3-1.
That back on November 10th, the first time the Jets visited Arizona. this season. They won by a 3-2 margin. Nikolaj Ehlers with the game-winning goal. Welcome back to NHL This Week. This segment brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. Jets and the Coyotes tomorrow evening in Glendale, Arizona. Sarah McClellan of the Arizona Republic going to join us in the final hour of the show. This Arizona Coyotes team is not a very good team, and that's being charitable. 29th in the NHL, 12-22-6. They're 29th in goals for, they're 27th in goals against. A bad year for the Coyotes as they really do look to retool that entire franchise. Nobody expected much from them, but I don't think they expected it to be this bad in Arizona this season.
Yeah, and Mike Smith was recently announced as the lone member of the Phoenix Coyotes. I was about to say Arizona Coyotes, Drew. Yeah. That's going to go to the All-Star game in Los Angeles. But, you know, certainly my pick of the Arizona Coyotes making the playoffs this year was probably just as good as my pick 2 years ago when I picked Todd Richards to win Coach of the Year. As I said earlier in the season, that was 1 year too early because it looks like Torts has a good shot at winning the Jack Adams this year. But, I mean, this Arizona
Coyotes. You had the Coyotes making the playoffs?
Yep.
What were you smoking that day?
Well, I was looking at that division, Drew, and I picked the Sharks, and I picked the Ducks, and they'll make it this year.
Yeah.
And then I was looking at the Kings, and especially without Jonathan Quick in net, my pick was looking pretty good. But
well, except they did, I mean, you made that pick before Jonathan Quick was injured.
And that was back in October, right? So, I mean, that was 4 months ago. For me, it was between the Flames and the Coyotes, and I went with the Coyotes because I thought, you know, with the infusion of youth and, you know, Dylan Strome obviously was, you know, a guy who started the season with the Coyotes and then they sent him to the World Juniors, but certainly Dylan Strome has not emerged as a center for them. He's probably he's about a year away.
Well, he's back in junior at this point in time.
Yeah, I mean, and he was really good for Canada at the World Juniors. Yeah. But, I mean, I looked at that defense and, you know, I liked the way that defense was looking. But certainly the Coyotes have just not got enough goals. And Max Domi and Anthony Duclair were so good in their rookie seasons, but they just haven't produced at the same level as they did last year. So
Domi, of course, out of the lineup since injuring his hand in a fight against Calgary in the early December. He's still expected to be out of the lineup for a little while still.
They just don't have enough depth right now, Drew.
Sure.
And, you know, that defense is still really good, you know, led by Oliver Ekman-Larsson, but they just don't score enough goals. As you mentioned, they don't keep the goals out of their net either. So, I mean, you're looking at the Jets playing the Coyotes twice in their next four games, so that should be two wins if you look at how bad they've been based on their record. But, you know, we've seen the Jets lose a game to the Islanders a couple weeks ago, so, I mean, you can't take them too lightly, but certainly, you know, this Coyotes team is a pretty big mess. The good news for the Coyotes is they've got Jacob Chychrun. Clayton Keller was excellent for Team USA at the World Juniors. Dylan Strome is playing junior right now, but he's going to be in the NHL full-time next year, and he's probably going to be a number two center for them, you know, for years to come. So, I mean, the pipeline looks really good for the Arizona Coyotes, but right now they just don't have enough good NHL players in their lineup.
Yeah, it's almost – it's like an eerily similar situation. I don't want to say to the Jets, but it's just in the sense that they've got a lot of young talent and they're just kind of waiting for it all to catch up to the NHL level, and it's a rough and bumpy road up until your young stars are ready to contribute on a regular basis.
Sure. I guess the positive for the Coyotes, of course, is that this will they'll be in a very good position to get a very high draft pick this coming June in the draft. Likely, you know, they would not be surprised if they were eligible in the Nolan Patrick in the running for Nolan Patrick as one of the teams most likely to get him, or to get Liljegren, the defenseman, who's expected to go second overall in this upcoming draft. But this Coyotes team is, they're a mess. They have some veteran guys, and the veteran guys certainly haven't been performing. I mean, you know, Radim Verbata, a guy they really picked up off the scrap heap from Vancouver, is their leading scorer. He's got 24 points. He's been good for them. You can't complain about the value you're getting from out of Radim Verbata.
Yeah, but
you
know, Jets have five guys that have more points than Radim Verbata, right?
But they're paying him $1 million. I'm saying that, you know, whatever you want to say about the Coyotes, they've gotten their money's worth out of Radim Verbata.
That was a nice pick. I believe I took him in the last round of my hockey pool for you.
You did. That's exactly right.
Yeah, it was a good pick.
It was a good pick for you. I do appreciate it. You've done well. Radford Data has done well for me thanks to your genius there.
And the Coyotes are obviously a team that is going to be a seller as we approach the late February trade deadline here, Drew. So a guy like Martin Hanzel might be traded. You look at Alex Goligoski, for example, a guy that they traded for. He's got 13 points in 40 games. He's a guy that they expected more of. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Max Domi's injured. Anthony Duclair has struggled big time. When you talk about a sophomore jinx, 9 points in 37 games. The bright spot for me, we talked about him at the top of the segment, Mike Smith. Mike Smith had a really tough year last year, mm-hmm. And he's bounced back. And on a team that isn't doing very well, he gets to go to the All-Star game. His numbers have actually been, you know, fairly good, .918 save percentage on a very bad team. So, you know, Mike Smith has been the lone bright spot. You mentioned Radim Vrbata, but I mean, top down, this team just isn't very good.
No, they just really aren't very good. They're going to be, certainly, like you said, is he going to be a seller at the trade deadline? They got some interesting pieces. You know, Martin Hanzel, a guy who's just about to hit 30, big, 6'6". He's, you know, lots of talk that he might fit with Montreal, given that they need some size up the middle. So that'll be an interesting guy. Michael Stone, of course, a Winnipegger. You know, he's going to hit unrestricted free agency this coming offseason. Big defenseman, plays the right side there. He could probably be moved at the trade deadline if the Coyotes decide not to bring him back, making $4 million a year. So certainly not a good season in Arizona, but the future, I would say, is still bright with guys like Strom, with Domi. Duclair, you wonder what path he's going on right now.
Yeah, Chychrun, Clayton Keller. I mean, that's right. A lot of people see Patrick Kane in Clayton Keller, and mm-hmm. you know, he might not put up 100-plus points in the NHL, but if you looked at how good he was for Team USA, winning gold at the World Juniors, I mean, sure. He was a top player, so Clayton Keller is going to be in the NHL pretty soon. They've got a lot of prospects there. You know, Anthony Duclair, Drew, has been a guy who they've talked about as possible trade bait. I don't know about that. I mean, he's in his second year. He's struggling. I mean, you've seen guys year after year struggle, you know, early on in their career, so I don't necessarily know that he gets traded. But certainly Max Domi, you know, he's injured and, you know, he's not having a very good second year, but, you know, he's not going anywhere. So this is a team that is going to be good looking forward. But right now they're just too young and they just don't have enough guys that can score goals.
Absolutely. Jonas Siegel of the Canadian Press joins us next. Look around the NHL, talk about what's going on. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is NHL Midweek,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number two of NHL This Week starts now on TSN 1290. Drew Medel alongside Ezra Ginsberg and Sean Assor. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Moose and Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend Jonas Siegel. Jonas is the national hockey writer for the Canadian Press. Jonas, good evening, and thanks for doing this.
Hey, no problem, guys.
Jonas, you know, we're going to, you know, get into some of your recent articles, you know, coming up in a moment here. I just wanted sort of an outsider's point of view. We've spent much of the first hour, and we spend much of all of our programs talking about the Jets, as you might expect from a Winnipeg-based radio station. I'm not sure if you happened to catch last night's Jets-Canadians game or seen the Jets at all recently, but from an outsider's point of view, or from maybe the 10,000-foot view, what are you seeing from the Jets? We keep talking about Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, how the team is consistently inconsistent. From your perspective, what do you see regarding the Winnipeg Jets?
Okay, well, the first thing is I like watching the Jets for two reasons. One, for Dennis Bayak. So I've always wanted to do like this game center rankings and try and figure out where every team would fit and who I like to watch, and they would be pretty close to the top. From my perspective, I didn't watch the game last night, but I saw them few nights before that, and the one thought I had while watching the game was, man, like I'd really like to see what this team looks like if everyone was actually healthy, like if you had a complete lineup. And you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think they've had that at any point. You know, you start the year, you know, Brian Little gets hurt right away, now Patrick Laine's been out, you know, Tyler Myers hasn't played. Like, there just hasn't been a full group where you can look at this team and say, okay, this is what they are. Mm-hmm. Like, you look at certain teams, and you know, I'm in Toronto, the Leafs haven't had a major injury. They haven't had a key player like a Brian Little, like a Tyler Myers go down for at all. You know, you look at the Washington Capitals, who've been super hot, the last few weeks. I think they've lost like 10-man games to injury all year. So from my perspective, like games like last night, you know, rile you up, you know, and obviously we saw, you know, Paul Maurice let that be known. But I just like to see what this team looks like when everybody's there for a few games at least and then try to make an evaluation.
Jonas, yesterday you had your mid-season award picks up for the Canadian Press, and you know you'd expect some of the picks to be what they were. Sidney Crosby, you had as your Hart Trophy winner after 41 games, you know, over Connor McDavid. Vezina Trophy, Devan Dubnyk, I agree with that one. The one that surprised me a little bit was Drew Doughty as your Norris Trophy winner. Why did you have Drew Doughty there over, say, Brent Burns?
So that's, for one thing, it's really hard to actually make choices, and I actually don't want to vote on the awards. If they ask me to vote, I don't know that I want to, just because it's a weird process, but it's hard. When it came to the Norris Trophy, my initial thought was I was going to go with Victor Hedman, who's been really, really good all year for Tampa, which is like the Jets has had tons of injuries. Hedman's on pace for like 72 points, which is a career high. I'm just not one of these people who thinks, you know, we should just look at the guy who has the most points on defense and say, okay, that guy's the Norris Trophy winner, because I don't know that that's what the award is. Burns has had a ridiculous year. You know, you don't see defensemen score like this. I'm actually going to try to do a story on that at some point. But I just looked at a lot of different factors with Doughty. One, who he plays with. You know, he's playing with a rookie, and that brought me back to a conversation I had with Rob Blake in the summer, and he said what Doughty does is he can basically prop up any player he plays with, you know, and so they can afford to put a guy like Derek Forbert or Braden McNabb last year with Doughty, and the pair can work, and the pair can go against top lines, and the pair can play big minutes. And if you look at some of the underlying numbers with Doughty, he's having basically the same year that he had last year. His power play production has come down a little bit, so his points aren't what they maybe could be, and they're certainly not in the ballpark of Burns or Carlson. But I just think if we're looking at what a defenseman does, not just putting up points, to me it's Doughty, but I don't think it's wrong to say Burns. I don't think it's wrong to say Hedman, and I think you could go in a lot of different directions. I just don't like the concept that we just pick the guy with the highest points. And it's the same thing for, like, the Hart Trophy. I think there's more to it than that.
Jonas, I want to shift our attention to the All-Star game. I don't think there's any surprise that, you know, Austin Matthews selected as an All-Star this year. There's talk about how Lou Lamoriello maybe likes to shelter his rookies or his young players from such an event. I'm just curious. Maybe correct me if I'm wrong, or maybe help me clarify. Will Austin Matthews be at the All-Star game?
Yeah, and I'm not sure where this talk that he was going to stifle it. I don't know if that's true or anything like that. What he does is he has a lot of rules, and some of them seem arcane, to be honest. Some of them seem like, you know, the type of rules you would have at school. You know, and obviously Lou Lamoriello came from a school before he joined the Devils all those years ago. So some of the rules like he would have for rookie players is if the television broadcast wants to talk to Austin Matthews after the first period, mm-hmm. not going to happen. Second period, not going to happen. If they want to talk to Austin Matthews for the post-game walk-off interview, probably not going to happen. Like, he just wants them to be focused on the ice. He doesn't want to distract them, so that's a rule. And, you know, in Toronto this year, they've got all these rookies. They've got Matthews, they've got Marner, they've got a bunch of guys who are having really good years, but you will not see them doing those kinds of things. So it's just little things that he tries to do to not only protect his players, but, you know, try to keep emphasizing that it's not about the individual, but the team.
Jonas Siegel, our guest on NHL This Week. Jonas is the national hockey writer for the Canadian Press. You know, Jonas, you know, obviously the world of hockey gets covered top to bottom. But you look at the Western Conference playoff race right now, and we're used to, when you look at the Western Conference playoff race, you're used to seeing five teams, you know, from one division being in the playoff spot and three teams from the other. Year in, year out, it's typically been five teams from the Central Division and three teams from the Pacific. Lo and behold, today it's actually five teams from the Pacific and three teams from the Central. Is the diminishing Central Division sort of the most underreported story in the NHL right now?
That's a good question. I think it's more, I don't know. You look at the Central Division, Chicago's fine. When I think we thought they might start to slip, mm-hmm. they've been pretty good. Minnesota's obviously been terrific, you know, and Devin Dubnyk has a big part to do with that, as does Bruce Boudreau. St. Louis is just okay. You know, I think Jake Allen's been just okay, mm-hmm. And they've had some injuries. Nashville, I think, is the team I'd look at alongside Dallas. Those two teams, and then you can throw Winnipeg into that mix as well. I think we thought all of those teams would be better than they are. Like Dallas, I think, is a really big story that if it was happening in Toronto or Montreal or New York, it would be a really big story. Like, they had a franchise record-breaking year, and basically every part of their game has been substantially worse this season. I mean, they won the Western Conference last year in terms of the regular season, and now they might not make the playoffs. And mm-hmm. the same thing, I think, is true to a degree with Nashville. I think we expected, after the run that they made in the playoffs last year, they had P.K. Subban, you know, Philip Forsberg's 21, 22, Ryan Johansson's really young. You looked at that defense, and you figured this was a team that was going to emerge and, you know, step forward and be a real contender, and that hasn't happened. And, you know, part of that is, you know, P.K. Subban hasn't played consistently because of injury. There was a weird fit, I think, initially, them trying to get used to some of the new parts. But I just think those two teams, and then you throw in all the issues that the Jets have had with injury, I don't know, it kind of makes sense to a degree. I think what's happening maybe in a bigger picture is that the behemoths, I guess we would call them, at the top of the conference, like Chicago and L.A., I think we'll start to see at some point the decline that they take. And obviously we've seen that this year with the Kings.
Jonas, you mentioned Victor Hedman earlier when we were talking about some Norris-caliber defensemen, and I wanted to ask you about the Tampa Bay Lightning. The Jets just defeated the Lightning about 10 days ago. The Lightning are currently 12th in the East, 4 points behind the Ottawa Senators for that last wild card spot. How much of the Lightning's problems right now revolve around the goaltenders?
I think it's more the injuries. I mean, it's a similar situation in some ways to the Jets in terms of so many players being down. It's been worse, obviously, in Tampa. You know, they've had Stamkos out since the beginning of the year. Ben Bishop, you mentioned, one of the goaltenders, he's been out for a while. I think he's just coming back. Nemestikov, Callahan, like, so many key contributors have missed time for them that they've not been able to quite put it together. You know, I think what's interesting with the goaltending is you're getting a little bit of a preview of what might be happening after this year. You know, Ben Bishop's contract is up. It's obviously seen, rightly so, that, you know, Vasilevsky is going to be the guy. And it's a transition, you know, when you suddenly become that guy. And they got themselves a little bit of a preview in the last month without Bishop. But I just think it's injuries. They just haven't had a consistent lineup night to night to night. And that makes it difficult. And that's why I think when you look at Hedman and you look at the season that he's had, he logs huge minutes, just as, you know, Burns and Doughty and all those guys do. But he's really an anchor for them and really the one constant, maybe besides Kucherov. And Kucherov has missed some games with injury. He's really been their one constant in the lineup. And I think, you know, that's a challenge. And I think that's why I think he deserves some recognition for the season that he's had.
Jonas, the Montreal Canadiens were in town last night. They dismantled the Jets, put nicely. We got a first-hand look at Max Pacioretty and just what he brings to the ice. Do you feel he's one of the more underrated players around the league, put lightly?
Yeah, it's a weird thing because, like, you'd think playing in a market like Montreal, it would be the opposite. It would be like a Toronto effect where a guy gets maybe even overinflated, but it's almost the opposite. Like, you look statistically, and this is where, you know, the idea came for me, is I just looked at how he ranked in terms of goal scoring since he became like a full-time player in Montreal. And basically it's Ovechkin, it's Pavelski, and it's Stamkos. I believe those are the only three guys who had more goals than he does since 2011. And so I don't get that. And, you know, my rationale and the conclusion that I kind of came to is he's never been the best player on his team. You know, you've always had Carey Price. You've always had P.K. Subban. So he's always kind of been, at best, the third wheel. And so you don't kind of get noticed. And yet you talk to Montreal fans, at least the ones that I have, and they haven't kind of quite wrapped their hands around him too. And I don't know why that is, you know, whether that's, there's like an impression of him that he's not like this heart and soul guy. And I sometimes think we overrate that stuff. You know, I'm sure you talk to Montreal fans and maybe they tell you they like Brendan Gallagher more. And I think we sometimes get wrapped in what guys look like instead of what they actually do and what they actually produce. And I think he's underrated in that sense.
Jonas, we'll let you go on this last question. If you were Colorado Avalanche general manager Joe Sakic, what would you do with that horrendously performing hockey team?
I would not overreact and make a trade right now if I were them. I just don't. I think you got to be really careful when you trade young players, and they've done it before, and it's come back to bite them. Like they made that. I don't know when they would have made the trade. I'd have to go back and look. But like at one point, they traded Kevin Shattenkirk to get Eric Johnson, and I just hesitate. I mean, you've heard Joe Sakic come out and say, you know, they need to get younger, they need to get faster, they need to get more skilled. You better be careful about which of those young guys you trade and whether that's the right move for you getting better. They've just made so many mistakes. You know, they've had draft picks misfire. They've tried to build, like, this big defense when the league is going in the wrong direction. I don't know. I think you got to be really careful about trading a Landeskog or trading a Duchesne or trading – I don't think they're going to trade MacKinnon, but I just think you should be really careful – about trading those guys in the midst of the frustration of a season. You know what I mean? Like,
sure.
Maybe wait to the off season, see what's out there. There's going to be more teams interested, and try to figure out a plan of where you're going and what you're trying to do. And let's be honest, like I don't think Joe Sakic has shown that he's the guy to lead that charge. So whether that changes or not, we'll have to see. But I don't know. It just doesn't seem like it's been run quite well. You know, obviously over the past few years.
Yeah, it was 6 years ago this February when that trade happened, and you can probably make the argument that the exception of that 1 year where they unexpectedly won the Central Division, it's been nothing but downhill for the Avs since then. Jonas Siegel is the national hockey writer for the Canadian Press. Jonas, really appreciate your time this evening. Thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, anytime, boys. Thanks.
We'll do it again, Jonas. Take care. Let's go to break. When we return, we're going to look at our mid-season award picks. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is NHL Midweek,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hagelin shoots it towards the net, comes off a goaltender. Now Crosby plays it off him in the backside. It goes in. Sidney Crosby with an incredible move as he got the puck behind the net. Threw it blindly almost, back off the backside of the goaltender Jones. In the twine it went, 2-0 Pittsburgh. Slap me silly, Sidney.
Sidney Crosby doing what only Sidney Crosby can do.
Mike Lang is the man.
Mike Lang is the
best.
Man. He's
the best.
He is terrific. That's Penguins broadcaster Mike Lang telling Sidney to slap him silly or being slapped silly by Sidney. I'm not sure which what he was exactly doing there. But anyways, Sidney Crosby... You know, we just asked Jonas about it. Sidney Crosby was his winner at the midway point of the season of the Hart Trophy. Ezzy, I'm going to, before I get to it, you have a bit of a different take on that, if I'm not mistaken, based on what you've sent me earlier today. And I'll let you defend your choice momentarily. But first, I'm going to tell you that this segment is brought to you by Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys is known as one of the world's best jersey customizers. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team, or have a jersey you want personalized, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com. Check out their showroom, 982 Portage Avenue. It's the corner of Portage and Sherburn. Keener Jerseys, where craftsmanship makes all the difference.
And Michael Remus is confirmed right now to have his brand spanking new 2014 Stanley Cup winning Los Angeles Kings Alec Martinez jersey. Just in time for his birthday.
Well, there you go. Courtesy of the boys at Keener Jerseys.
Yep. I've seen it. Great job.
Again, we talked about it on, I think that was Saturday's show, that about why anybody would get a 2014 Alec Martinez jersey.
He's a good defenseman.
I'm not disputing that. It's a bit of a random jersey for a, you know, a 30-year-old to purchase here in Winnipeg.
Remus is a defenseman. He plays for the Bernstein's Deli team in the Highlander League.
And that's where the similarities begin and end.
Hey, he's a big fan of Martinez.
Didn't Remus, I think I remember a game that Remus fired a puck into his own net a couple times. I think he went top shelf. I think he went bar down once or twice into his own net as a defenseman.
He's great at tipping pucks into his own net.
Yeah, it's a real skill there.
Happy birthday again to Remo. Remo's also got the rare late 90s Buffalo Sabres Maxim Afinogenov jersey.
Yes.
So he likes the obscure jerseys.
He also just bought an Andrew Ladd jersey today, clearance. He told me that when I came into work.
You know, we were talking about this off air. The Jets just
I don't know about that one. But
the Jets just actually tweeted this as well. We were just talking about Patrick Laine made a special visit to a young fan's house today. The Jets just retweeted it also. So he's not back on the ice, but you know, Patrick Laine is out. He's visiting some fans. He dropped off a jersey to a young fan who told him to feel better and sent him a card, hoping that he wishing him well in his recovery from the concussion. So Laine, by reading the tea leaves here, he's out and about. So he is probably getting healthier and on the verge. Obviously not on this road trip, but maybe next week when the Jets return home, you might expect to see him back in the Winnipeg Jets lineup.
Yeah, that a boy, Patrick. That was a very nice thing to do.
Now, Ezzy, we were talking about the awards at the halfway point.
Yep.
My choice was Sidney Crosby.
Yep.
You went a different tactic. You went with Connor McDavid. Defend your choice.
Well, right now it's between Connor McDavid and Sidney Crosby. I mean, you're going to be hard-pressed to find many people who aren't going to pick one of those two players. I mean, there are other players that you could give it to. I could hear the argument for Brent Burns right now, but when you're talking about Connor McDavid, I mean, we didn't see Connor McDavid for half of last season in his rookie year, but I mean, we've seen Connor McDavid three times against the Jets now, and the Oilers have won all of those games. But for me, I mean, Connor McDavid is the reason, guys, why the Oilers are in a playoff spot. We knew the Penguins were going to be in a playoff spot. And, you know, each choice is a good one. I mean, I can hear the argument for Sidney Crosby. The majority of people right now are picking Sidney Crosby for the Hart Trophy. But for me, Connor McDavid right now is the best young player in the game. And he is the reason why the Oilers are in a playoff spot. And not to say that they don't have other guys that are contributing, but you take Connor McDavid off that roster, I don't think the Oilers are in a playoff spot.
Sean, would you pick Connor McDavid or would you pick Sidney Crosby at this point?
I got to side with Mick Ezzy for McDavid.
Really?
I got to go with it. I am just looking at the Penguins roster. Evgeny Malkin, 44 points. Phil Kessel, 41 points. There is a strong supporting cast in Pittsburgh that if Sidney Crosby had to take, let's say, 6, 7, 8, 9 games off, they could stay afloat.
He did. He's taken off about 10
games.
Exactly,
yeah. This year. Now he's coming back on a torrid pace. But you just look at the Edmonton Oilers. If they lose McDavid, who's keeping that team afloat? It's the most valuable player to their team, and I just feel that from a pure value perspective, McDavid is more valuable to the success of the Oilers than Crosby is right now to the success of Pittsburgh.
Right, and I mean, I still think, Drew, that Sidney Crosby is the best all-around player in the NHL right now. McDavid has 48 points in 43 games. Of course, Sidney Crosby missed some games. He's got 45 points in 34 games. So if Crosby was healthy and he wasn't injured for those first 6 games of the year, Crosby probably leads the league in points, but to Sean's point, I mean, Crosby's got Evgeny Malkin, he's got Patrick Hornqvist, he's got Phil Kessel, he's got Chris Letang. Connor McDavid doesn't have those players, sure, you know. They
play
do
with Patrick Maroon right
well,
now.
Well, sure, and Milan Lucic has been a nice addition there, but I mean, and Leon Draisaitl obviously is a good number two center for the Oilers, but I mean, Connor McDavid right now, it's only a matter of time before he surpasses Crosby and he wins every Art Ross trophy every year.
Ezzy, for best coach, the Jack Adams Trophy, and I'm skipping over a couple here, but that's okay. You have Bruce Boudreau over the consensus favorite, John Tortorella.
Yeah, and right now it's probably between those two.
Is that just your personal animus towards Tortorella through there?
No, I mean, I want to pick John Tortorella, but...
Well, you can. There's nothing stopping you from doing it.
I'm most impressed with what Bruce Boudreau has done with the offense of this team. Not just the defense. I mean, Devan Dubnyk right now, and, you know, I'm foreshadowing a little bit here, but I have Devan Dubnyk as the Vezina winner after half of a season and over Sergei Bobrovsky and Carey Price and Braden Holtby. But what Bruce Boudreau has done with this team, I think it's the style and the confidence he's brought to this group. And this Minnesota Wild team, guys, has been a good team for many years, but they've been a team that's been out in the first round. I don't know how many times over the last 5 or 6 years. So I think Bruce Boudreau's done an excellent job, and he's kind of instilled that winning attitude in the dressing room. So John Tortorella would be a great choice too, but Bruce Boudreau's just done a heck of a job, and I think he's got to be, at the very least, a finalist for the Jack Adams Trophy.
Sean?
This one I will disagree, and I'm going to go with Tortorella for a few reasons. One, a 16-game winning streak. You've got to be doing something right to motivate your players to go out and get 16 straight Ws. There's also a few things that really interested me when he took over this job. When specifically, I believe it came to the power play, and he said the dressing room reeks of entitlement. I remember that he said that, and I started thinking about that, and he obviously identified something that was wrong in that room. and has, you know, seemingly worked it out or trying to right now as the team moves along through the season. You know, they're recovering from having their winning streak snap. But it's just something that statement is so strong when you identify such a glaring issue, such as an entitlement and like that value that you're higher than you really are. And if you can work that out of a team and then get them to, I guess, operate under what you're trying to instill and do it successfully, I just feel that that's deserving of the highest praise when it comes to coaching staff.
For the Norris Trophy, as you have Brent Burns and his league-leading 44 points among defensemen.
Just think about that for a second. Brent Burns, at the midway point of the season, has 44 points. Mm-hmm. And he's on pace for 30 goals, by the way.
Yes.
He's got 17, right?
He has 17, that's correct.
By the way, he was my preseason pick for the Norris.
Well, he's got one right.
I'm biased here, though. I've been a huge Burns fan for probably 8 years now.
Okay.
So I am biased. But, I mean, guys, look at what he's doing for the San Jose Sharks right now. And Mark-Edward Vlasic is their top shutdown defenseman. But, I mean, Brent Burns, the fact that he might score 30 goals, I don't even remember the last time a defenseman scored 30 goals. I mean, Erik Karlsson, year after year, has been up there as far as leading defenseman in points. But this might be the year that Burns steals that crown from Karlsson. So for me, you know, Brent Burns has been the best defenseman. Is he the best defensive defenseman in the league? No. But as we know, this trophy is not awarded to the best defensive defenseman. So for me, it's Brent Burns.
I'll agree. Brent Burns.
Burnsy.
Yeah. He dominates. If you watch the San Jose Sharks, every time he's on the ice, you notice him right away. He may not be, like you said, the best defensive defenseman, but he takes over a game. And what he does is no secret to anyone, and yet he's still been able to do it so successfully over the past however many seasons. And he impacts the game every time he's on the ice. So, Brett Burns.
Last one we'll talk about. It's one, the one of probably most interest to hockey fans here in Winnipeg. That's the Calder Trophy. As you went with Patrick Laine and his 37 points in 42 games over Austin Matthews and his 35 points in 39 games.
Yeah, and Austin Matthews' point per game is better than Patrick Laine. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Laine's got more points. Right now, the sexy pick is Austin Matthews, right? So it's certainly going to be between Laine and Matthews. But, guys, this might be the best Calder race that we've maybe ever seen. Because when you throw in guys like Mitch Marner, mm-hmm. you can make the argument that Matthew Tkachuk is in the discussion.
Zach Werenski
is certainly in the discussion. So you have maybe five or six guys that are fighting for this Calder Trophy right now. But the reason why I picked Laine is probably because I watch him play night in and night out. But, I mean, this guy, I don't think we've seen a goal scorer like Laine since Alexander Ovechkin. I mean, Laine might end up scoring 700 goals by the time his career is over. Ovechkin's about to hit 600. So, I mean, Laine's got 21 goals. For me, it's just what he's done, the swagger he's got, just the goal scoring, what he's done on the power play. That's why he gets the edge. But Austin Matthews is just as deserving as Laine for the Calder Trophy as well.
Sean, quickly.
I got to go opposite. I got to go Matthews. I just feel that as a rookie, I know he's a bit older than Laine, but you watch his game, he's just a totally complete player already, and he's just a fresh 19-year-old. So you watch the way he controls the game through the middle of the ice. I'm not, and no disrespects to Laine. Obviously, we watch the guy in awe every time he hits the ice. But yeah, to me, just Austin Matthews, the more complete rookie out of the two.
And they're much different players, not just mm-hmm. because Matthews is a center and Laine's a winger, but just completely different styles. Matthews mm-hmm. gets a lot more of his goals in front of the net as opposed to Laine, who's more of a shooter. But, I mean, it's going to go right down to the wire, Drew. I mean, these two guys, either one of these guys is most likely going to win the Calder come June.
Well, one of the two teams is in the playoff spot, and the other one isn't. So we'll see if that impacts the deciding vote at the end of the season. Sarah McClellan of the Arizona Republic joins us next to talk about the Coyotes. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is NHL Midweek,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Twenty-five minutes before the top of the hour. Welcome back to NHL This Week. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, alongside Sean Assor and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at IllegalCurve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program Sarah McClellan of the Arizona Republic. She covers the Arizona Coyotes. Sarah, how would you evaluate the Alex Burmistrov era as a member of the Coyotes so far?
It hasn't officially started, I guess. it's been a process for him to secure a work visa and to actually physically get to Arizona to meet up with the team. He did meet up with them last week in Vancouver when they were on the road, and I think he got in a morning skate with them before the Canucks game, but obviously was unable to participate as he worked to secure that visa. But the Coyotes then went on to Anaheim and then returned home, and he obviously wasn't able to accompany them. So he's been in Vancouver waiting to secure this work visa. The Coyotes reconvened today in Glendale after their bye week ended, and they said that he's still working through that process, but they hope that he gets to the U.S. tonight and skates with them tomorrow, but it doesn't sound like he'll be a player tomorrow night against the Jets, so they want to kind of get him up and going, get him skating, so we'll see if Saturday he makes his debut, but it's been a lengthy process just to kind of get him acclimated with the team since they claimed him off waivers.
Sarah, it was on Tuesday that it was announced that Mike Smith was going to be the lone representative for the Coyotes at the 2017 All-Star Game in Los Angeles. Has that been the best story for the Coyotes this year, considering that Mike Smith had such a rough year in 2015-16?
Yeah, it's been one of the more positive ones. And, you know, it's been a tough year for the team, but you kind of can find, you know, pockets of growth or positive stories, and he's definitely been one of them. Obviously, he missed, you know, about 3 months last season to have surgery on his core and kind of fix some nagging issues there. He came back and really responded very well. It just seemed like his health was in order, so he was able to kind of play more up to his potential perhaps, and got bothered by a knee injury early this season to suffer another setback for a month. But ever since then, you know, he's been, you know, arguably one of their most steadiest players night in, night out. You know, there's been some games here, there, some goals here, there where he'd probably like to have a do-over. But overall, he's been steady. And you think of the young group in front of him, the mistakes that are bound to happen with a group that's very much in transition, having a stabilizing presence back there who's, you know, been stellar at times. You know, you think back early December, he faced 60 shots from the Blue Jackets, arguably the best team in the league, and stopped 58. He's been impressive at times, so for him to get this nod late in his career, I think he's really relishing it and enjoying it and looking forward to spending the weekend in LA with his family.
Sarah, just looking at the stat line here for the Coyotes, they're, you know, they're ranked 29th in the league for goals for with 86, 27th in goals against with 128. Which of those two is more alarming to you?
Well, I think they've really struggled to score. And you know, I think, you know, maybe if they get a few more bounces here or there, maybe that kind of, you know, improves their win-loss column a little bit better, because they have been getting solid net minding from Mike Smith on a regular basis. You know, their defense has been a little bit of a work in progress at times, I think partly just because of the new faces that they've integrated. You know, not only is there 18-year-old Jacob Chychrun in the mix, but they brought in an Alex Goligoski and a Luke Shen, and I think some of these players' capabilities, especially like a Luke Shen, the muscle and the bite he can bring to a back end, I think they're probably enhanced if the team's playing with a lead and it can be in a little bit more control of a game. So if they were able to find a few more goals and have a little bit more offense, you know, I think it might help them a little bit more, feel like they have a style and a system that they can maybe play to their max capabilities and really accentuate maybe some of their on-ice strengths.
Sarah McClellan, our guest on NHL This Week. Sarah covers the Arizona Coyotes for the Arizona Republic. You know, obviously, you know, the season hasn't gone ideally for the Coyotes, you know, being towards the bottom of the NHL in terms of points with 30 so far this season. That puts them, you know, 29th, only ahead of the Colorado Avalanche. I don't know very many people that had the Coyotes pegged, you know, to be a playoff team, but is there some internal disappointment over just how poor the season has been? You know, they're 1-8-1 in their last 10 games. They got 12 wins in 40 games played so far. Is there some internal disappointment over just how poor the season's been?
You know, I think they expect that the process is going to take time. I think they realize what they signed up for by going young and throwing as many young players onto the roster that they did. But when you look at it compared to last season, it does seem like a step back. It does seem like this team is, maybe now this is kind of year one of this process, and this is the real starting point, because You know, although they did implement some youth last year with Max Domi and Anthony DeClair, you know, they were in a playoff spot this time last year. They were a playoff team, you know, going into the All-Star break. So, you know, maybe it's not fair then to kind of compare last year to this year because it is so different. But, you know, there was talk before this season of being a team that dictates and is a playoff type team. And I think obviously that's still the goal. That's still the ambition to build that way. But I think reality has set in that it's tough to win when you're young, and it's tough to win when you're going through these growing pains and you have such a young identity that's figuring its way. So I think they understand where they're at, but I don't know if that makes the process any easier because these are pro athletes and coaches that are wired to win and put that max effort in. So, you know, I think there's that perspective, but I don't know if it makes it any easier.
Sarah, you mentioned Anthony DeClair earlier, and he's one of those young players, 21 years old, had a great season for the Coyotes last year, scored 20 goals. I'm sure you've been asked this question quite a few times already this year, but why has Anthony DeClair struggled so much offensively?
You know, I think the expectation is that kind of there now, and so now that there is kind of a barometer to measure him against, you know, I think maybe that kind of sets in, and maybe that's tougher for a player to handle. You know, he came in last year as a rookie and expectations are probably pretty low. Just find your way, don't look out of place and see if you can help out now and then. But he did more than that. He scored 20 goals and really just impressed with his speed and his skill. And I think he knew it was going to be tougher this go around. I think he expected the competition to get tougher and just the game to get tougher. He wasn't an unknown. So, you know, on the flip side, you know, he did have, it seemed, better puck luck. As much as, I don't know if you can categorize that, but his shooting percentage was off the charts last season, and this season it's been tougher. I think his shots are a little bit down because of his confidence maybe taking a hit amid this slide, but he just doesn't seem that the pucks that were going in last year, now they're hitting a leg or a post or they're going just wide, and so that probably does fall back on the player and that mojo and that feel. But I know he's tried to work at it. He's tried to get that confidence, get his mental game right, because I think he feels his physical tools are there. It's just getting his head in the right spot to be able to accentuate them.
Sarah, I'm curious. You know, there's some established veterans on this roster. You know, Shane Doan, Radim Rabada, Luke Shen. I'm wondering, how have they been handling the situation there with the youth and the struggles? Have they been taking a more of a, like a mentor approach to kind of ease these kids through what should be not, you know, not a very enjoyable time right now?
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, I think that's an important, I guess, part of this process is everyone, you know, feels that to successfully complete the rebuild, you have to integrate youth and they have to take on sizable roles and they have to contribute. And that's all correct. But you do need some veteran leadership, I think, to help them not only ease, you know, the rough patches, but to be a role model, to be an example. So you definitely see it, whether it's in practice or after games in the locker room, you see veterans talking to young players or mentoring them on the ice, you know, during sessions. You know, I think that's part of the process, too. This is definitely a team that's going young, that made a point to add youth. But, you know, there's still value in those veterans. And I think, you know, they made a point also to keep them around, make sure that they have some role models to look up to and kind of maybe weather, you know, the rough patches when they come because they have the experience. They know the ups and downs of the league. And you kind of need that mix, I think, to kind of get through these types of tough patches.
Sarah, we're about 6 months, pardon me, not 6 months, we're about 6 weeks away from the NHL trade deadline coming up at the end of February. You know, a lot of people are looking at Martin Hanzel as a guy that's potentially going to get traded. Do you see the Coyotes moving Martin Hanzel or maybe a Michael Stone who's in the last year of his contract?
Yeah, those are some of the names I think to keep an eye on for sure. You know, I think Marty Hanzel has generated probably the most buzz because 6'6" centers, you know, that can play in the West and the rugged style going up against Anze Kopitar and Joe Thornton. Those don't grow on trees. So I think that he's probably generated a lot of interest. It doesn't sound so far like the, you know, there's been a lot of trade chatter, you know, amongst Jung Chaika and other GMs in the NHL, but I'm sure it'll ramp up as we get closer. I think that's just normal for teams to make the calls and Chaika to see what's out there. You know, I know they have interest, obviously, in keeping Marty Hanzel, but I think it's going to come down to can they, you know, where do they see him in their long-term future? Obviously, they have centers coming up through the pipeline, You know, if you put the dollars and cents and term aside, how do they see him fitting in? Do they see him remaining an integral part of this middle ice and signing him to a long-term deal, or do they want to give more of that opportunity to the likes of Dylan Strome and Christian Dvorak and maybe a Clayton Keller if they see him staying up the middle? So, you know, more than negotiations, I think it's going to be whether or not the Coyotes see a long-term fit for him here.
Sarah, we'll let you go on this last question. A lot of eyebrows were raised when John Chyka was named the Coyotes general manager earlier this summer. How have you seen him develop and change as he gets more accustomed to, you know, being the head man in a front office? You know, been on the job now for, you know, give or take, you know, 6-8 months. How have you seen Chyka change throughout the course of his time as Coyotes general manager?
Well, yeah, I'm not sure if I've seen much change, just because I think a lot of the moves that he made, you know, were in the summer. I think he really put his fingerprints on this team in the offseason. And, you know, we saw a lot of change there just with the roster turnover. They gutted about half their roster and implementing the youth. And I think now it's just been seeing it through. So I'm really interested to see, getting to the trade deadline, what type of maneuvering he might do there, because I think that'll kind of showcase a little bit more of the direction this team's headed, how much veteran leadership they feel that they need to keep around, and maybe how much more willing they want to give opportunity to young players. So I think this is just the start for him kind of shaping this roster and the direction it feel, you know, he feels it needs to take. So it's been busy so far when you think about how much this roster has changed since the summer. So I'm interested to see if it keeps up or if it starts to settle down and we start to see the growth of these young players, you know, become regular NHLers and NHLers that become mainstays with the Coyotes.
Sarah, we also wanted to know what you've been doing while the Coyotes have been on the bye week the last 5 days.
You know what? It's actually been kind of busy. You know, the All-Star announcements came out Tuesday, and I've been kind of checking up on their minor league operation in Tucson. So I'd love to say that I just was enjoying the beautiful Arizona sunshine and getting outside, but I've been in front of my computer a lot. So maybe I'll change that up during the All-Star break later this month.
Sarah McClellan covers the Arizona Coyotes for the Arizona Republic. Sarah, really appreciate your time this evening. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
Take care. Let's go to break. When we come back, we talk about Taylor Hall. He makes his return to Edmonton in about 13 minutes' time. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is NHL Midweek,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Final segment on this Thursday evening of NHL This Week. It's brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. If you're looking to warm up, because, you know, it's frigid outside, Rumors Comedy Club, get some laughter going. You know, laughter will warm you up. I'm not a scientist, but I'm fairly certain that if you laugh a lot, you're likely to be warmer than if you don't laugh at all.
Well, it's been proven scientifically, actually, that laughter is good psychologically and can help with depression.
It's almost like it's the best medicine.
It is.
It's heard that
once. It does warm you up. Think about it, because laughing is a physical act, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So it warms you up.
I think so. So you know who you should go see? You should go to Rumors and go see Kelly Taylor. And he's a good Saskatchewan boy. And so Kelly knows what this weather's all about. He's very funny. So Rumors Comedy Club, tickets available, rumorscomedyclub.com. Go check out Kelly Taylor. Darren Rose from Match Game is coming towards the end of the month. And, of course, at the beginning of March, Jay Farrow from Saturday Night Live. Laughter, it's the best medicine. Let's look at some out-of-town score update. Busy night as it is a Thursday night in the NHL. Apparently, the goaltenders decided to stay home in Philadelphia. The Canucks lead the Flyers 4-3 after 40 minutes in Philadelphia. Lots of goals being scored in that contest. In Ottawa, not as many goals. The Senators have a 2-0 lead over the Pittsburgh Penguins. That's about halfway through the second period. In Tampa Bay, the Lightning are looking desperately to get on track. Andre Palat doing his part. He's got both goals in a 2-1 Lightning lead over the Buffalo Sabres. They're nearing the halfway mark of that game. In Nashville, Tuukka Rask took a hard Roman Josi slap shot up high, left the game. Zane McIntyre in as the backup for the Bruins, scoreless after 20 minutes in Nashville.
Former UND goalie.
There you go.
Great name.
Zane or McIntyre?
Just combine. Okay. Zane McIntyre.
Both together. Sounds, okay. Yeah.
In yeah, any name with a Z
Zane,
in it is
yeah,
good.
Zane.
Yeah,
just,
yeah. Yeah, I got you. Yeah.
Zev.
Zev.
Zorro.
Zorro. Okay. Are you done? You have any more Z names? Or Zelda? How about Zelda? You know any Zeldas?
Zoe.
Zoe.
It's a great video game.
Yeah. Legend.
Yeah.
It's a legendary video game, if you will.
Xenon.
Are you done? In St. Paul, the Minnesota Wild lead the Montreal Canadiens by a 1-0 score. That's after 20 minutes. Christian Folland gets his first of the year.
Zoya.
In Dallas, Lauri Korpikowski has the Stars on the board. They're up 1-0 over the Red Wings. Another team looking to get on track. The Stars out of the playoffs and after a tremendous year last year. Time for them to turn things around, quickly running out of time. Three games yet to come
tonight. Are you here, Rick Ralph? Let's get to Taylor Hall and Adam Larson.
I'm almost done. Three games yet to come tonight. Anaheim visits Colorado. That's going to start momentarily. The Blues and the Kings, that's later tonight in Los Angeles. And then the other game is the New Jersey Devils, yep. Taylor Hall's New Jersey Devils, making their only visit to Edmonton. Taylor Hall returning to the team that drafted him, you know, returning to the team that which he was the captain, returning to the team at which he was traded from earlier this offseason in exchange for Adam Larson. So Taylor Hall, which I'm sure will be an emotional return to some degree, to Edmonton to face the Oilers tonight.
Yeah, and the Devils have really been struggling. They're only a couple of points behind the Islanders, who are last place in the Eastern Conference, the Devils second last place.
Yeah, you're very upset about that, aren't you?
Well, I mean, you look at, I mean, the Devils, the first 15, 20 games were looking pretty good right now, but Corey Schneider has not played as well as I think he can play, and, you know, the Devils have not been getting enough offense. And the staple of this team, dating back to the mid-90s, has been the way they've played defensively. So, I mean, the Devils aren't mathematically out of it right now. They're about 6 points right now behind the Ottawa Senators for that last wild card spot. But, you know, certainly the Devils have had, you know, too many losses in the last 10 games here. So, you know, it's been a rough year for them. But, you know, talking about Taylor Hall, you know, going back to Edmonton, not playing in the same arena that he played in because it's obviously a new arena, but, you know, they're going to have a presentation honoring Taylor Hall and his 6 years there in Edmonton. And, you know, it hasn't worked out for him quite, you know, the way he planned as far as record goes, but he's still going to the All-Star game, Drew. So, you know, he's had a pretty decent season. I think he's around 28 points right now for the Devils. He's missed some games with that knee injury. And, you know, Adam Larson has worked out pretty well playing with Oscar Klefbom on the top D pairing for the Oilers. So, should be a good game tonight.
It's sort of funny you mentioned the how it's worked out, and you know that trade was pretty much universally panned when it happened, you know, back in June, I believe it was. But you know, Adam Larson, you know, he's certainly not flashy, but he's sort of been a stabilizing force on that Oilers back end. And guy like Chris Russell, who, you know, is certainly no, you know, no darling of the analytics community, has been a bit of a stabilizing force on the back end for the Oilers. So for an Oilers defense that year in, year out was AHL level at best, those guys, Larson, Russell, guys who are, at the very least, they're NHLers, have been stabilizing. So it hasn't been, it's been a better trade than people thought initially. And I mean, I still don't think it was a wise trade for the Oilers. I think they could have gotten more for Taylor Hall. But right now, things are working out well for them. But I think that's probably a lot to do with Mr. McDavid.
Yeah, and you know, it's easy to look at the standings and see Edmonton in a playoff spot right now and the Devils not in a playoff spot and say, well, that was a good trade, guys, but I'm still not doing that trade. I'll still take Taylor Hall straight up over Adam Larson. You mentioned he's only got 7 points in 43 games, and sure, you know, they got him for, you know, his defensive prowess, Drew, but Taylor Hall, I've said it before, I'll say it again, is a top 10 left winger in the NHL. So I'll still take Taylor Hall. But, you know, certainly the Oilers, because they've had so many first overall picks, could afford to trade Taylor Hall, right,
sure.
Drew?
Yeah.
So, I mean, the Oilers traded from a strength, you know, to address a weakness. So, I mean, it's worked out for them thus far.
And I remember when that trade was made, Pete Chiarelli was asked, was the acquisition of Jesse Puljujärvi, does that kind of propel you to make this trade or encourage you a little bit further? And he said flat out, yes. And it's interesting because when you add that offensive piece, you can stabilize, like you were saying, the back end. Cam Talbot can't be overlooked in net. He's just provided so much stability for the Oilers. And yeah, like you said, New Jersey doesn't really know where they're at. They're kind of in this, not rebuild, but they're kind of just coasting along. And mm-hmm. I guess they'll have to reevaluate what needs to be addressed in the offseason based on where they finish in the standings and where they sit in the draft. But Taylor Hall moving forward, I mean, he's going to be the player he's always been, you know, that fast, prolific, exciting player that sometimes takes too many risks.
Yeah.
And gives up stuff defensively to put the puck in the net. It's always just, it's always fun to watch these games, the emotional returns for players that, you know, put their blood, sweat, and tears into a city, were drafted. I was reading a couple articles today about this. Taylor Hall saying that it's been a very different lifestyle for him. The media doesn't hold him as, quote-unquote, he laughed, accountable.
Sure.
And he can go get a coffee without being recognized now. So it's interesting, yeah.
Big difference between New Jersey and Edmonton, certainly. That's it for this Thursday edition of NHL This Week. Big thank you to our guest, Sarah McClellan of the Arizona Republic, Mick Collagio of the Standard Times, and Jonas Siegel of the Canadian Press. In case you missed any of the show, it's available for download on iTunes and on our website, illegalcurve.com. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. You can follow us on Twitter at IllegalCurve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com. Props to producer Alex for doing a great job. For Sean Assor, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Until Saturday at 9 a.m., we wish you good night and good luck.
This is NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN 1290.ca.